Alright, welcome to Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Switzer.
That's me.
I am Jeremy Lance.
That's him.
Another round of World Cup matches through match day two.
Way to get everyone jazzed up for listening to this one. Like that's the intro.
Do you like that enthusiasm?
That everyone was waiting for.
And more matches.
Yeah, I mean, it's
slogging on through
it. To be fair, we are reaching the point where it is feeling a little bit like a slog.
Well, because we're about ready to hit match day three, where like half the matches don't even matter.
Yeah, because as we will go over here in a little bit, a lot of stuff's already settled at this point. It's kind of just like who finishes where in the group, although there are groups where things are a little wild still, and we'll get into those.
Yeah.
But it's been like, I don't mean to begrudge your opening, because you do all the openings, because I'm not good at them, but
that's what I do.
Well, it's been a fantastic World Cup.
It really has.
And I feel like you undersold it a little
bit.
Okay. Should we do it over?
Do you want me to give you another one?
Okay.
All right, welcome in. Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Switzer.
That's me.
I am Jeremy Lance.
That's him.
Another week of the World Cup. It's been awesome. A crap goal in sight.
This is great. This is so much better. I'm sure everyone listening in is
totally loved it.
Edge of the seat right now. So.
But yeah, not a crap goal in sight. Like, there's been so many just, like, really, like, it's either a really good goal or a hilarious goal.
Well, I'm going to say, like, Harry Kane's third goal today was probably a crap goal.
No, that just proved his dominance. He was playing so well that he was scoring goals he didn't even know he was scoring.
Okay. Fair enough.
Like, he didn't even have to be even, like, mentally present of, like, hey, I'm going to score right here. And he was still scoring.
I was really enjoying watching all of the Arsenal fans who struggled tremendously with supporting Harry Kane, especially if they're English Arsenal fans, and seeing someone today tweet something along the lines like, this guy is just no skill at all, just total crap, doesn't even, like, this is how it always goes for him. He scores all these goals, and some of them are such crap, and it's like, man, that's shame on this striker for scoring all these goals. They all count for the same way, no matter how they go in.
Yeah.
But but you're right. There have been some absolute screamers. Luka Modric, a man not known for hitting screamers, hitting in a worldie. I mean, there's just been some really good goals. And on the whole, the games have been pretty fantastic. Like, we've probably only had like two games that were duds. We've yet to have a scoreless draw, which, by the way, that broke a World Cup record.
Yeah.
I think we're on,
let's
like
keep that going.
29 matches now without.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty freaking cool. So this has been a fantastic World Cup, and that's why we're back doing episode two. It's not just going to be the two of us, of course, today talking about the World Cup. Although,
yeah, we actually have a guest.
Yeah, not very often that we do that. We're going to try to do more of that. We always say it, but
because we always say it, and it never comes true. Through.
Yeah, well, today we have one, and we'll be joined later in the program by Dan Viserma. He's going to tell us how to pronounce it appropriately, and I'm going to give it another go later on in the show. But you probably know Dan better from the Free Beer Movement, and he's going to tell us about some of his travels watching World Cups abroad and explaining kind of where he sees the organization he associates himself with.
Yep, the American Outlaws.
Yep, where they're going to take the game in the future here in the U.S. So we're excited to have Dan in here. But
we got to kind of take this one off.
Yeah. Dan's a talker, and he gave us plenty of content, and we'll enjoy that portion of the show a little bit later on. But we're not going to start there. Instead, we're going to start with the action.
Kind of a winners and wankers of its own sort.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in, and who is already out?
Who's the winner in this group, and who is the wanker in this group? For the most part, we've got a good detailed picture of where everything's going to go. Mm-hmm. We kind of gotten a bit of a path laid out in front of us where we can say, like, oh, these teams look like they're going to go through, and there's going to be plenty of that. And there are plenty of teams who are decidedly already out.
Do you want to go bad news or good news first?
Is this what we're going to do, like, all the good?
Let's go,
come back and just
everyone
say,
who's done for
you guys are all losers in the second half of this.
Yes.
I like that because it just makes it a little more segregated.
Well, that's, ooh.
Not in that,
not
sense.
What we're
just
going.
It breaks the program up. Segregated discussion.
So who's in?
Yeah. Change this subject, please.
Let's just go down the list. Russia, your hosts are in.
No one saw this coming.
No. In fact, I believe we both wish that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think we all kind of just said let all badness come to them. Pretty much everyone that I wish that upon this World Cup, that's not going that way.
Did they hack the World Cup too?
I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how they could have tried to hack the World Cup, whether that's with performance-enhancing drugs or with
well, we know that's
probably bribery. But it sounds like they've been actually tested extra hard. Maybe at the Olympic Committee's urging, I think is what it might have been.
Probably, because they're like, hey, you might want to watch after those guys.
They have had a problem in our competitions.
They'll get you.
You should look for that. But no, they've been the revelations of the tournament, mm-hmm. I think, from an underdog standpoint. There really isn't one that's jumped out in the way that Russia has. And they're going to top that group, too, which is...
Yeah, kind of wild.
It's not certain they're going to top the group, but it's damn near certain that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
All those goals they piled up in that first match generally gives them the breathing room that they're looking for there.
Yeah, Uruguay will also be joining them as they both are on 6 points,
mm-hmm.
Just crushing their competition, who we will get to, because if you're doing the math at home, that means the other two teams are out.
Yeah.
So Uruguay moving through, I would say not overly impressive from them. They're just getting through.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly, I mean, Russia did well to really get after some of the opponents that they've faced here in the group's stages.
Yeah.
Uruguay maybe didn't show the might that they could have.
No. No, but this is kind of how Uruguay go, though. They don't necessarily come out of the gates on fire.
Yeah.
They kind of scuff and mark their way all the way up into the knockout round, and then that's where they tend to do a little bit more dirty business.
Yay.
Both metaphorically and actually.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually the four-year anniversary today, mm-hmm. of that bite.
Which one? There's you have to be more specific. The World Cup one. Yeah.
The one they have in 4 years.
The one against Italy, if you're being more specific.
Yeah, not the one against Chelsea, not the one against Ajax.
Oh, okay. Neither of those.
Neither of those.
Okay, good. You have to clarify with that one.
France, they are moving on.
Mm-hmm.
They are through with, I would say, relative ease. This was a team that is obviously a lot of people, including myself, think can have what it takes to go all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so far looking real good for them.
Yeah.
Moving on through pretty easily into the knockout round. Croatia is through to the knockout round.
Yeah,
at a group after, D. After the pummeling that they gave to Argentina.
Yeah. This looked like a match, I'm going to say, from before kickoff. Mm-hmm. It looked like Croatia were going to win this thing. I don't know if you saw Messi's body language going into this game. While they're playing anthems, he is like really menacingly rubbing his brow, like someone who is weighing the weight of his entire country on his shoulders. It seemed like he was advertising, like, hey guys, I'm going to be off my game today. And off he was, and off Argentina was.
Well, if he said, I'm going to be off my game, Willie Caballero said, hold my beer.
Yeah, he really wanted to say, like, hey, everyone stop thinking about what happened to the Liverpool keeper in the Champions League final. I'm going to show you a different way of doing this.
This is Willie Caballero. I mean, I got to watch his club matches this year, mm-hmm. for Chelsea. This guy is good for at least, and I predicted this in the office before the match happened, this guy is good for one just howler or just shocking moment of some kind or another.
Every match. So bad of a howler where you're trying to chip a defender and where you literally just can't get over his head.
Throw the ball at a striker.
Yeah.
Just throw the ball. I remember this happened a couple years ago in qualification. I think it was the last World Cup qualification where a keeper tried to clear it and he cleared it low and like it just went right to like Zlatan's chest and he just fired it right back at him.
Yeah. Never a good idea to give Zlatan the ball in that position.
Yeah.
unfortunately, that's how it went down for Mr. Caballero and left Argentina in a world of hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina are not down and out in this situation.
No, luckily they were handed a lifeline by Nigeria.
Yeah, huge result for them.
Beating Iceland. Had Iceland won, pretty much would have made things almost impossible.
Yeah.
Goal differential and everything.
This Group D definitely is a situation where all three teams, aside from Croatia, mm-hmm. who of course are through, have an opportunity to do this. Argentina need a win and Iceland to not win. Iceland must beat Croatia and hope Nigeria don't beat Argentina. And Nigeria must win or draw and Iceland not beat Croatia. So loads of scenarios in there.
Yeah.
One of them will happen. One of them. Not all of them. We skipped over Group B. Want to backtrack a little bit there.
All right, go for it.
Yeah. Spain and Portugal both need just a point to advance. So yeah. Neither one of them.
So none had an advance.
Is that what you jumped
on? I was going through.
Oh, you're literally just saying, here's who.
Here's who's in.
Okay, fair enough. So that's why now I know why and what's going down there.
Welcome to the podcast.
Well, hey, I'm tracking along here for the most part. Would you like to go to Group E where, no, you wouldn't because neither one of those teams are actually through yet.
England and Belgium.
Yeah.
We'll round up the group of people already in.
Okay.
They're in from the same group.
Mm-hmm.
They'll decide in what I hope to be an entertaining match. I was kind of hoping there was more at stake for this match.
Yeah.
Because we had Spain, Portugal right out the gate. We had Colombia, Poland, I thought was going to be an exciting one today. It ended up not being.
Sure.
We didn't have too many big country clashes in group stage so far. This is kind of our last one.
Mm-hmm.
Is England, Belgium.
Yeah, I mean, it is the last of the big games. And nothing really rides on it in the sense of whether or not someone gets out of the group. Both teams are getting out of the group.
Right, but Belgium's hurt, so it sounds like they're going to be resting. Mm-hmm. Hazard and Kaku aren't going to play, it sounds like.
But it is worth keeping in mind that there is the small matter of where you finish and what that can mean for who you could draw the next round. So whoever takes the points in this one will end up winning the group. If they don't both win, I think they're even on goal differential as well. It boils down to, I believe, fair play. So whoever has had the least amount of cards.
Which England has the advantage at the moment.
Let's see if Dele Alli plays in that next match.
Might have to bench him just for that.
Yeah.
All right, let's go who's out.
So there are plenty of teams who are out.
A lot of them.
We're just saying teams who are out, not who could potentially be out, now that I know how this game's working.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They were out.
They were out before things even were kicked.
Yeah.
They're out.
Yet to score a goal.
Mm-hmm.
I would say unlikely.
Yeah.
To score a goal.
Very unlikely. Also in their group, Egypt. They're kissed as well.
Yep. Scored only one goal.
Mm-hmm.
Mo Salah putting away a penalty.
Might be his last goal for Egypt as well. Rumor being that he is threatening to retire over taking a picture with the leader of Chechnya. Look.
Well, it was he did that. People got mad. And he was like, well, fine. Then I'll take my ball and go home.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, hey, guy. Like, there are repercussions for posing for pictures with certain people and maybe knowing, hey, a guy who's kind of slaughtered some people might be one you would want to avoid.
Memo to Jeff Cameron.
Yeah, FYI. there's a seat waiting for him at a news station somewhere.
Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
Also no goals.
Yep.
I'm going to jump ahead real quickly. Tunisia's out. Northern Africa.
Had a
bad World Cup.
Bad World Cup for them.
Bad World Cup.
In general, not a whole lot of good things going on for African teams, on the whole, outside of Nigeria. No.
Senegal's all right.
And Senegal.
They're still in it.
But it's not been the kindest of World Cups to the African continent.
Well, between Tunisia, Morocco, and Egypt, I think you only had two, three goals between those guys. So.
Not ideal.
Mm. Peru. This one's kind of actually surprising to me.
Yeah.
I really thought a lot more was going to be coming out of Peru.
I kind of almost, I probably said this on the first show, I kind of thought they would be a little bit of a sleeper pick.
Yeah.
And they've underperformed. It's been a little sad to see that happen with them. Staying on this.
Also no goals.
Yeah.
No goals.
Staying on this side of the Atlantic, a couple other teams have also struggled. Costa Rica and Panama both out.
At least Panama scored a goal because Costa Rica yet to score a goal.
Yeah. For all the ballyhooed CONCACAF, let's support CONCACAF. We have not either given them enough or it's not done enough for them. The CONCACAF teams outside of Mexico have really been a little wishy-washy. So,
Mexico took all the CONCACAF magic.
Yeah.
That's what happened there.
You'll be shocked to know that people are using that as a way of saying how crap we are as well.
Oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Can always rate a team that's not playing based on how their performances have not been.
Mythical performances.
Yeah, that's right. Only other team that we have not touched on yet that has been eliminated is Poland in Group H.
Yeah.
Another one of those teams, Peru, we talked about, you know, how it's kind of surprising they're in this situation. Poland was looked at as a legit, like, they could make some noise in this tournament. They made no noise.
No noise.
At all. And really struggled today in the Colombia match. Didn't really at all look at points like they were going to have any sort of handle on the game. And we're actually rewatching the tail end of that one at this point now.
Yep,
so
they're still not going
to
win it.
There are your teams that are in and out to this point. I listed some others who have chances to be in or potentially
biggest out. Surprise in either of those lists.
I think Poland crashing out as badly as they did would probably be the biggest surprise of the group so far.
I think in retrospect it makes sense because it's been a while since they even made a World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But you know there was so many Premier League fans that were like, oh, Mo Salah's going to do a job. He's gonna get Egypt to the knuckle. He's gonna drag them.
Yeah. Well, a little dose of reality. It turns out a team with literally one world class player and then a bunch of other players who are hardly world class usually isn't quite enough to get you over the edge.
Turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out. But one of the other things we want to talk about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Is, and maybe it's a little, you contended it may be a little too early to call this.
Yeah.
And to start throwing these out.
It is, but.
Well, so we can maybe revisit this.
We should.
But so far, we've had two rounds of the group stage, match day one, match day two of the group stage.
Mm-hmm.
Breakout stars.
Breakout
stars. It always happens. We always talk about this every year. These guys that have big World Cups. And then immediately make big moves, generally to like a top flight European team. I think of like Mesut Ozil, 2010, big World Cup.
Big move to Real Madrid.
Yeah, makes his big move.
Yeah, Sami Khedira went along with him. Mm-hmm. You know, you see this at the Euros. We saw this happen pretty frequently as well. But you think about...
There's that Russian kid that Arsenal.
Yeah, Andrei Arshavin is exactly who I
didn't
was thinking
work out.
Of. But man, Arshavin had some moments too.
He had some moments in the Euros.
He also had some moments for Arsenal too, and some delightful moments in front of the camera pretty much any other time. But no, it is something that always happens, and there are these names that kind of rise above the pack that we hadn't paid much attention to before. It's usually young guys that we talk about in this respect,
right.
Someone that's going to make a big money move. You, I think, took a little bit more of that angle. I took a little bit different angle on this one.
Sure.
Much like I did with our first segment. So may as well do it again here. Yeah.
Good show prep by both of them.
So in that sense, why don't you give us what we should be hearing, and then I'll give some of mine their little tweaks.
So
as well.
Let's start with two Russian names.
Okay.
Alexander Golovin and Robin Zobnin.
Yeah.
Both having really great starts. Obviously, both of them shine in the drubbing that was 5-0 over Saudi Arabia to start this World Cup off. One goal apiece for each of them. Really solid performances. Both of them, Golovin is 22, Roman is 24.
Mm-hmm.
Both playing for top clubs in Russia, CSKA Moscow and Spartak Moscow, respectively. I think these guys are definitely primed to for a move.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually even heard that rumors that Chelsea was going to look at them. Apparently, our owner is partial to Russian players.
Oh, weird.
Not sure where he gets that from.
The ones that you brought in have totally panned out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yuri Zirkov? Is that?
Yeah.
It's about the only name I can think of.
There we go.
Yeah.
I think he's still around.
He's probably on loan. Can't imagine he's not on
he's
loan.
He's still on our payroll.
Yeah. Staying on the Russian theme, I picked another Russian teammate of theirs. Not on the younger end, though, but someone who's kind of having a breakout. And that's Denis Cheryshev. A little odd in that he's 27, so a little bit further down the pipeline.
And he's been around.
And he has totally
been
around.
Like, this guy's already been bought by Real Madrid.
So that's wild. He actually started – he moved to Spain fairly early on in his career and moved to Real Madrid's Cantera in 2002 and spent a long time in their academy. Eventually made over 109 appearances for Real Madrid Castilla, their reserve team, the Real Madrid B. Did make two first-team appearances. But Wild. He's currently at Villarreal. He spent a couple of years on loan while with Madrid, both at Villarreal and Valencia. Sevilla. So definitely a guy that, given his pedigree, could potentially see him make a move to a bigger club, given that he's had a bit of a standout. He's had all these goals. He's in the golden boot race for them, and may tempt someone to come and actually make a move on him, given that he's kind of got some European experience already.
Let's just talk Premier League. Mm-hmm. What Premier League club would make this decision?
Well, I mean, if there's one that it's really written all over, Chelsea going and buying the biggest Russian goal scorer seems really, really
logical.
I mean,
he'll never see the pitch, but we'll at least put him on the books.
I would totally say Cardiff City would be one where, like, you could see them splashing some cash on someone who's probably not quite worth the cash they're going
to
spend on
it. Seems like a Vincent Tan thing to
do. Oh, it's Vincent Tan written all over it. So, but I could totally see a Premier League team making a move, potentially one of the bigger clubs in Spain, like a you know, not that Villarreal aren't a bigger team, from a competitive standpoint, but maybe a Sevilla, maybe an Atletico Madrid, taking a more permanent stab at him.
The other name that I think has really been the one that's on everyone's lips, Chucky Lozano for Mexico. First of all, heading into this World Cup, World Soccer Shop, I think it was World Soccer Shop or soccer.com, one of those places that basically had the same website, did a map state by state of the most purchased personalized jersey. Chucky Lozano, pre-World Cup, had 10 states in the U.S.
Yeah,
where
by
he
far
was the number one jersey sold.
By far the biggest number.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not surprising given that prior to the tournament, he was already being linked with some pretty hefty clubs. Barcelona being among them, that that interest has
grown
and heated up a bit as he's performed well in the showing so far. So, yeah, not sure how comfortable I feel that everyone's going and spending their $150 in the Mexico team store like Landon Donovan, but
at least they're getting more than a t-shirt.
That's true. That's true.
He just got a t-shirt. You buy a personalized jersey. At least you get your money's worth, I guess.
$150 t-shirt, man. It's made out of some dope cotton.
It's lanolin.
Yeah. It's good. Sheep's wool.
Yeah.
My next breakout is actually a coach.
Oh, and interesting.
I could totally see someone making a luxury move on this coach simply for the internet clicks.
Yeah.
That's Alou Cisse, Senegal's coach, who's being hailed by some as a sex symbol.
Already has the gif of the tournament.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The nice,
for
the awesome
very,
fist
like,
pump.
Slow fist pump.
Yeah. Deliberate. But Cisse, if I don't know if he rung that name rung a bell for you. Totally rung a bell for me. I spent some time with Birmingham City and Portsmouth in the early to mid 2000s in the Premier League era for both of those clubs. But yeah, he's definitely a guy that's had a little bit of success, and you could see someone being stupid and hiring in a guy that's simply there just to sell some sex symbol dollars for him, if nothing else.
Well, let's do this again then. What Premier League club?
Saying a Premier League club would do this.
I think a Premier League. I think there's probably a Premier League club. Well, you know, you're right, actually. Because they're so about just hiring the same 25 old white dudes again.
Yeah. I could see a championship club, like, splashing on it.
Yeah.
Or maybe even a League One side, potentially. Maybe that would be a little lower than he would want to go. But France seems the inevitable answer to me.
Yeah.
One, because of language barrier issues. And two, simply because French clubs always seem down for a gimmick, so get them in.
Marseille, here we come.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any others?
No, that's all I got.
This is weird. I feel uncomfortable saying this, but I feel like it needs to be said given that there really was no hype about this team at all prior to the tournament. But I've got to say, like, breakout star status a little bit for the, like, entire English national team.
Okay.
It feels weird because they have so many big name players that we're all already so familiar with. But, like, no one was really hyping England at all before the tournament. Like, everyone was talking Germany. There was some talk about Croatia.
France,
Belgium, right? But England was like, they got all these guys, but they, you know how England are in tournaments. England have England. They crush someone in the group play, which never happens for England. Mm-hmm. And two, they battled through a game where they controlled it, but didn't really ever have, you know, like the outright, like, oh, they're crushing it. And they still ended up winning that match. And that's a game that England lost pretty much every time they played it in recent tournaments.
And so, they currently have the top goal scorer of the tournament.
That they do.
Harry Kane, who has in two matches played in his World Cup career, 5 goals, and that already puts him third all-time of England World Cup goal scorers.
Wonderful stat.
Third all-time.
Also, one of those things you need to be a little aware that the tournaments used to be much smaller and single elimination. So just remember that.
Okay.
Worth keeping in mind. But also an incredible stat. I mean, that's still nuts.
I mean, they showed the amount of matches the other guys around him played. Mm-hmm. They were all like, you know, 7 to 10 matches.
Yeah.
And then he's here with 2.
Look, it's not impressive. I'll say that much. So yeah, I want to give a little bit of a shout out to England. Feel like they're fairly deserving in that sense.
All right. Before we go, we're going to talk tonight about the 2010 World Cup. Look back at that. A good World Cup. World Cup with a lot of moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
One particular that a lot of U.S. fans were about. But first, we have a guest tonight.
All right. So joining us as a guest on this week's World Cup special is someone who's done a bit of World Cup traveling himself. And you've probably seen him talking U.S. soccer, at least on the soccer Twitters from time to time. We have Dan Versema, the Dutch pronunciation we learned here momentarily ago. Dan, you probably know better as Free Beer Movement. But Dan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be on.
Absolutely. Well, Dan and I go way back to his early days in the free beer movement, kind of blogging world. He was kind enough to lend me a hand and give some exposure to a soccer pub atlas that I'd put out onto the web. And we kind of partnered up on that to help bring more people to the game. And it's a pleasure to finally get you on the show. We've met a couple times before and get your opinion on some things World Cup related today.
Yeah, no, it's actually quite surprising, but soccer Twitter is not always the most awful place. Sometimes you end up forming nice little partnership friendships.
Yeah. Hopefully this meetup doesn't involve the Columbus Police Department.
Yeah, I think the last time Dan and I put our heads together was for a Dos Acero here in Ohio, and the Columbus Cavalry showed up and broke things up with our little beer-related party.
Hopefully this doesn't end the same way.
Yeah, I don't think it will tonight.
I don't even have a beer in my hand right now. This is actually quite shameful.
I'm like feeling a little uncomfortable with that thought. We are sending Dan some beer from Cincinnati. We've got the FC Cincinnati beer that'll be heading his way here shortly. So we'll solve that problem, but just not tonight.
Well, I'm going into my house to go grab one right now.
So. All right.
There it is.
Yeah, we're glad to get that in hand. So, Dan, part of the reason we wanted to reach out to you was to get some opinions about World Cup stuff. But before we do that, we want to ask the question that we always ask everyone, and that's that we bring onto the show. And that the question is how did you fall in love with the sport? How did you choose to get as heavily involved in things as you have? Obviously, we've talked about Free Beer Movement, but where does your story with soccer begin?
Yeah, so I was always a very mediocre soccer player, and so those who can't do, then bloviate about it. So I grew up playing, you know, youth soccer, but I was never that good. It's interesting to think about. I actually started playing soccer 1994. So I was just getting into awkwardly hitting a ball with my 2 feet when the World Cup was happening in the United States. And it's just wild to think that that giant moment in American soccer history kind of casually passed me by. But, you know, I played and grew up playing and made great friends and joined the American Outlaws a couple of years after they started. But I actually moved abroad and was a teacher in Honduras for a while. And there I really became I saw a passionate country full of passionate soccer fans, you know, filling the stadiums, and just people that soccer just infused a huge part of who they were. And you know, I came back to the United States and I knew there was this passionate soccer community, but it wasn't one that kind of folded into every layer of American society. And that was 2009 when I came back and kind of asked myself, you know, how can I pursue kind of a deeper love of American soccer as a personal project, and maybe other people want to join me. So I started the Free Beer Movement, which was all about examining, you know, can you create more soccer fans through the power of a free beer? And you know, for those of you who are familiar with the Free Beer Movement, I know you guys are, but it's just, hey, you got someone who's not a fan, let's get together for a game, let's go to a game, let's go to a bar, come over to my living room, the beer's on me, and, you know, just ask away, ask about this incredible sport that the rest of the world has fallen in love with, and you know, let's just hash out over a beer, and if you're a sports fan, you know, hopefully this is something that appeals to you. So that was kind of the onus and the evolution of me as a soccer fan. I think growing up, you know, like I said, missing the 94 World Cup, but I was actually in Europe during the 98 Men's World Cup, which obviously is being well documented by Roger Bennett, American Fiasco. And having been in Europe and quite literally observed the fiasco firsthand and being harassed by Europeans, I almost went full Euro snob before FBM and all of that. But I actually really give a lot of credit to the 1999 Women's World Cup champions for saving my American soccer fandom. And now I proudly call myself an American snob to defending him to the world's masses, partly through FBM and also through American Outlaws. So it's been a winding and amazing journey, but, you know, and that's definitely one of the down times as an American soccer fan. But, you know, what makes you a true fan is living through the good times and the bad.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've kind of seen the full gamut of the American spectrum on soccer and where we've been along the way. And it's funny, a lot of us kind of trace our roots back to that 1994 World Cup, you know, whether loosely. Jeremy, you had like a gift that your dad brought back.
Yeah,
from
my dad was dragged to a game by a coworker.
Yeah, I was sent into full-on hysteria as a soccer fanatic at that World Cup myself. And it's always cool to hear how many people can kind of trace their roots back to that same time. Now, you mentioned that you'd been abroad, obviously, for the 98 World Cup. You had a really interesting experience with AO traveling down to the 2014 World Cup in Brazil that I know you documented really well. But for our listeners who didn't have an opportunity or didn't follow you back then, walk us through a little bit about that journey that you took, that took several stops along the way to get down there.
It was definitely an adventure, and it was an adventure for a lot of folks on that. You know, I don't. There were basically, so just to start the whole story off, the American Outlaws offered a package to the 2014 World Cup, in which about 500 people ended up signing up and paying their dues, and they're going to go to the largest contingent of American, single contingent of American fans to ever go to a World Cup, right? So we're feeling good. We're feeling great. We've got two charter jets ready to leave Houston. And, you know, bless everybody on those flights. They were, you know, they had a series of ups and downs, particularly the second plane. It was managed by some very, very poor logistics from some sides, so you know, we'll make some better judgments next time we offer a travel package.
Right.
But basically what happened is a part of that company Dynamic Airlines, which I believe has gone bankrupt now, because they clearly should, they didn't know how to run a charter airline. But so they downgraded the size of our airplane just the night before we were all supposed to depart from Houston to Natal. We were based out of Natal. We're going to travel to, obviously, the first game was there, and then go to Manaus and Recife and you know, support the United States. So they downgraded the size of their plane, in which 14 folks had to give up their seats. And quite naturally, as a part of someone who's been in the American Outlaws national leadership, you know, my wife and I, who paid as a part of the package to come with me, and some other members of National and some of our friends, we gave up our seats, and the travel company was like, rest assured, we will get you there. We've got, you know, 48 hours to get to Natal, and that should have been ominous enough.
Yeah.
So
we're going to take the whole amount of time for us to get you there.
don't worry, guys. We've got 40 hours. It couldn't possibly take this long. So we spent an extra evening in Houston. And the next day, we you know, followed the two planes. And, you know, we were told, okay, well, here's the plan. We actually are going to send you from Houston, and we're going to book you through Port au Prince, Trinidad, which now knowing Trinidad is a nightmare of American dreams for many reasons. but in this case, it was just our own personal nightmare. And, you know, the 14 of us get our tickets and we're on our way, right? And we're told by the president of this charter company that he's actually going to be sending his very own plane, which it seems from a cost-conscious way, I shouldn't have his own plane. He should focus on the ones that he needs to get
sure
the fans to the World Cup. So we get to Trinidad, and I'm actually the first to go through security. And I'm like, I got the bags, guys. I'll get there first. And it was bizarre because nobody else followed me through security. And so about 15 minutes later, I wander back to passport control, and everybody's had their passports confiscated because we are told – no plane has come for us, and therefore, since we do not have an outbound ticket, we're not allowed to enter the country. You know, the immigration rules essentially say, you know, you're not intending to come into Trinidad, and you certainly have no exit strategy from the country. So we're going to hold on to your passports until you do. So, just wild times. It was just a signal of just a lot of really weird stuff to come. So we do the only thing that we can do is I sit and chill, and slowly but surely we found out that we will book a new flight. So but that won't happen for six or so more hours. So we drink a bunch of Caribe beer, just waiting our time. And we booked the last flight out of Port of Spain. And we head to Georgetown, Guyana, which is a very bizarre destination. That is not Brazil.
Yeah. At least it's on mainland South America at that point.
Yes. We're finally making our way to you know, the actual continent we're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
We land in Georgetown, Guyana, which is famous for a cult mass suicide.
Yep.
Among other beautiful things. It's a wonderful country. We did not get to explore. We land and we're told that a plane will someday come for us, and we spend 12 hours waiting in the most bizarrely mid-level luxury that I think I've ever experienced. Very plush leather couches, individually wrapped bologna sandwiches, all the soft drinks that we could possibly want. It was a very bizarre thing. So before you know it, you know, about 12 hours later, the original plane that was supposed to take us from Houston to Natal returns. And the interesting thing about that plane was it was meant for 250 people, and yet there were only 14 of us. Because this was the only plane that the company was able to get. And so they rerouted their flight plans. They came back an additional trip. They picked us up. They landed a 747 in Georgetown, Guyana. Took us to Natal. We landed an hour and a half before kickoff for the U.S.-Ghana game. Everybody else who had intended on making it into that match had already cleared immigration, so there were zero people in the airport, quite literally.
Right.
With the exception of two immigration agents who were very surprised to see people coming through. We jumped into a bus, and with about a kilometer, to use local distances, for a kilometer from the stadium, we saw the lights of the Natal soccer stadium in the distance, and we ditched our luggage, ran to the stadium, made it 5 minutes before kickoff, purchased a beer, saw Dempsey score 29 seconds in, and there are probably more tears on my face than beer in my cup, because it was just an incredible relief and just a bizarre journey of epic proportions of incompetence and just wildness. But, you know, for these 14 people, we made a joke Twitter account. We turned it into an amazing race. We had all sorts of checkpoints and, you know, like, just kind of, you know, things just pass the time, because it was, you know, for a long time, you know, they were essentially saying, if this plane doesn't land by 6 a.m. local time, there's no possible way we can get to Natal in time for the game. And so it was a literal race against the clock, despite the 48 hours that we did supposedly have. Obviously the 2014 World Cup from our perspective, it was a wonderful experience. It was great to bring all of those people to Brazil and at home safely, but certainly a bizarre journey nonetheless for the 14 of us, which, like I said, included a bunch of the AO national folks and a bunch of other people who, bless their hearts, did not have to go on this journey with us, but, you know, they we tricked them.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all been tricked into something. Maybe not necessarily that extreme.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember following the fake Twitter account as well as your kind of live tweets along the way from it, and just kind of being a bit bewildered that anyone would have gone through that process, and legit wondering whether you guys were actually going to make it there in time. So,
we had reached out to the American embassy in Brazil, you know, and just, you know, like tried to figure out what our options were. Like, I mean, not that we were expecting any Marines to come and rescue us or anything like that, but, you know, it certainly was, I mean, like I said, it was very stressful, and, you know, nobody slept for essentially 2 days. And so, you know, like I said, that the relief, I mean, it's funny, like for so many American fans, Ghana has been such a boogeyman, you know, over the 2006 World Cup and the 2010 World Cup. And it was a huge relief for American soccer fandom as a whole. But when you haven't slept for 48 hours and your last meal was a individually wrapped bologna sandwich at Georgetown, Guyana, scoring against Ghana in 29 seconds by Clint Dempsey is about as good as it gets.
Nah, I literally can't imagine that wouldn't force pretty much anyone into tears. So
yeah. Only topped by John Brooks scoring, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So you had a pleasurable experience once you got there, at least, and enjoyed taking in a tournament in a fellow country, or at least a different country hosting it. Can you offer any kind of insight into what it was like from an experience of encountering other fans that had made similar journeys along with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, Brazil, obviously, you know, going back to what I talked about when I, you know, was my evolution as a soccer fan as a whole, like being in a soccer mad country like Brazil is incredible, right? It just the entire nation oozes with passion for the sport, and you can't help but feel that. And obviously during the World Cup, this is an incredibly proud moment for a proud nation that has such a long storied and successful history with soccer. You can't help but be swept up in it. Then of course, you know, like I was in France during France 98, just as a passerby, you know, and I experienced World Cup qualifiers in Honduras and across the United States. I went to the Women's World Cup in 2015. You see fans from all over the world joining together for this one sport. And it's so romantic, you know, and then seeing the scenes from Russia, obviously, you know, we are not there. Newsflash, spoiler alert.
Yep. But we've gone over that.
Yeah. Right. I'm sure.
We've noted it.
You know, it's always such an incredible experience to see a mishmash of passionate people coming together for one game, and there really isn't an experience anything like it. Obviously, that, you know, that the United States and Canada and Mexico will be able to host it in 2026 is an incredible honor, and I can't wait for that to return, because I truly missed out in 1994. You know, my dad was not a soccer fan; he is now. I took him to Mexico City for that USA 1-1 game, but I'm a father of a 2-year-old, so he will be 10 when the World Cup comes back, and I'm very much looking forward to sharing in that experience with him, and I think showing the beauty of what is the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was also the same thing we both thought of collectively. Is like, oh wait, how old are our kids going to be
when this all goes down?
It's gonna be perfect.
Yeah, I was.
I have to think about how old you will be.
I definitely tried to avoid that.
We ignored that for sure. But no, it's going to be a cool experience for us all to kind of go through. You know, we talked a little bit about this evolution of our fan base and what you've experienced on your side of it. You've been really heavily involved with American Outlaws. over the last, you know, damn near decade at this point. Would love to kind of get your take on what the organization has kind of gone through in a growth perspective. You've been through some extreme highs, some extreme growth, and also some controversies along the way that you've had to deal with. And I think you guys have kind of grown as an organization, and I'm intrigued to see where you guys as an organization, and obviously you don't speak for the entire AO organization, but what you guys are kind of looking at from a growth perspective as we head towards that 2026 World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's been wild. I mean, you know, obviously the sport has grown by leaps and bounds, and you know, the men's and the women's national teams have seen great success, and so has the domestic league on a number of levels, you know, including Cincinnati, of course, getting an MLS bid, local there.
Oh, yeah.
But, just that little thing. It's grown beyond anybody's wildest dreams, and that's both an incredible thing and an incredible testament to American soccer fandom. But it's also something that I think, both from a logistical and even your wildest dreams, nobody in America has ever anticipated that. You know, the story has been told a lot, but you know, the couple of guys, Justin Brunken and Corey Donahue and another individual, Ben, who's not a part of the organization anymore, but they all started it as kind of a brainchild after going to the 2006 World Cup and not finding any organized fan events. And then coming back to the United States post-World Cup and you know, having experienced the 2006 World Cup, they wanted to go to more domestic matches and all that, and there wasn't anything. So they just kind of took it upon themselves in September of 2007 to organize a bus trip to Nebraska, or from Nebraska to Chicago, for a USA-Brazil game, which coincidentally I happened to be at. As a Wisconsin resident, I went down there with some friends, and I wasn't a part of AO at that point, and had no idea about him, didn't even notice him. From there, they've grown by leaps and bounds. I joined in 2008, and then I started helping out volunteering in 2013. So roughly from the World Cup, I've managed communications and helped do the social media and emails and whatnot to keep our members informed. But, at this point, we're sitting at about 25,000 members. And, I won't lie, the men missing out on the World Cup was a huge blow. And there are a lot of people who are kind of checking themselves and saying, you know, I'm just not ready to be a men's national team fan right now. And you know, we live and die by the success of our national team. So we've invested a lot in over the last couple of years in supporting the women's national team and being as loud and enthusiastic presence as we possibly can for them alongside the men's national team. We organized for the 2015 Women's World Cup, a project that I led, and there were several thousand AO members that traveled to Winnipeg and Edmonton and Montreal and Vancouver, obviously, for the final, in which we had a very large presence and took over the streets of Vancouver. But it's been an interesting evolution, and you mentioned growing pains. You know, I think as any organization grows, you start to figure out what you stand for and what you don't stand for. And you need to help in defining that. And I think there are moments in which we've grown, and before you know it, there's so many people acting as U.S. fans. And, you know, everyone says, oh, those guys are, they're U.S. fans, they're American outlaws. And they may or may not be. And the presence grows. And then people do dumb things. You know, people take the idea of supporting the United States of America way too far. And just because you're supporting the United States does not mean you need to be, angry or it's not an outlet for some sort of jingoism.
Yeah.
And, I think we experienced some tough times of people acting and inappropriately, as American fans. And obviously we're in a very delicate time politically in this country, and in which people feel like they're safer to act like that. And like I mentioned before, I think we're defining who we are more often. And, we rewrote our code of conduct and our enforcement mechanisms to make sure that, American Outlaws is a place where people can be who they want to be, and that our group is as much as it possibly can be free of racism and homophobia and sexism, and treats people with equality and respect. And it's never perfect, but we always strive to be better. And we certainly strive to kind of put ourselves on the map and say, this is what we believe in. This is who we are. And if you don't align with that, there's no place in AAO. But, you know, obviously 2010 was a huge moment. There's all those viral videos of people celebrating and AAO bars around the country. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure we all participated in those in some way. And, it's, you know, 2014 was another watershed moment with the whether you like it or not, I believe chant. Very catchy, very easy to memorize, very easy to overuse. you know, I think that, you know, with our support of the women as they go to France, which we're planning on traveling to that as well, and a youth-driven men's national team they're gonna face a lot of tough tests post World Cup. You know, Mexico is confirmed, rumors of Brazil and Colombia and Argentina. I think mm-hmm. people will come back to this team. They'll see these young, hungry players and, you know, they'll come back and they'll look to AAO to gather their fandom and we'll be there, of course.
Exciting.
Very exciting.
I warned you I was going to talk a lot, guys.
No, it's perfectly fine. Hey, the more you do, the less that we have to do, and that ultimately keeps more listeners turning in. So
makes the rest of our segment super short. Yeah. That's what we want.
Right? Absolutely. Oh, and we ran out of time, guys. Yeah. Those are predictions.
Very cool. Well, Dan, we appreciate you jumping on and joining us to shed your insight both on your travels and what it's like to take in the national team from abroad. We certainly want to champion any of the efforts you've taken along the way. You've been a great growth spot for U.S. soccer over the last few years. And it's been great getting to know you and to basically extend an offer anytime you want to come up and check out a soccer game in Cincinnati. You know how to get a hold of.
Absolutely. I would love to. Obviously, the atmosphere that's been built there is incredible, and it's only going to get better as you move into Major League Soccer. I live here in Austin, Texas, and we're certainly not short of a controversy. Maybe this is a topic for another episode with the relocation and all that. I do want to go on the record to say that I'm very uncomfortable with the prospect of the Columbus Crew coming here. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, we definitely have some crossover with some Columbus audiences, and mm-hmm. they'll be more than happy to hear that news on your end.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and you know, twisting my arm to grab a beer on a Sunday night. So.
Hey, we're always happy to help everyone out with a little bit of a drink on a late evening before the week starts back up.
Peer pressure.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, right. Very cool, Dan. Well, if you want to follow Dan and see more of what he's doing for U.S. soccer, you can, of course, tune into things at American Outlaws. But you can also find him at Free Beer Movement. Is that still a handle you're doing stuff from soccer-wise, I think?
It is. It's mostly, you know, dad jokes and puns and whatnot. So, you know, if that's something you love, then tune on in. If something you hate, then that would explain the lower follower count from time to time.
Hey, it's all right. We, being dads ourselves, we are fond of the dad jokes, and that's something most everyone that listens to us would probably be somewhat okay with. So, well, thanks again, Dan. Like we said, to give him a follow at Free Beer Movement, check out all the stuff he's doing at freebeermovement.com. And like I said, we'll raise a beer to you, and we'll get you up here sometime soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, see you, Dan.
See you. Always good talking to Dan from Free Beer Movement. I remember meeting him with you in Columbus. I believe he was in a walking boot for some reason. I vaguely remember that.
It feels right.
Yeah.
I also had an injured foot then.
I had
a big cut.
I remember
there.
You guys took your shoes off. You and what's his name took your shoes off and were kicking the ball around in the grass there.
No, I didn't do it there. I did it at the lake. Like the day before, I kicked a rock at the bottom of a lake, and then Rob Stone commented on the large cut on the top of my foot. I should not have been kicking the ball there, but...
But you did.
But I did.
So what's his name? Was challenging anybody to try to kick it past him.
Yeah, Jason.
Yeah.
Never forget that. Anyway,
good times.
Yeah, great times. But let's get on to the 2010 World Cup back in South Africa. As we've done with these two shows, for those of you who didn't listen into the last World Cup show, you didn't have much time to listen to it. So because of that, we'll explain this again. We're going to spend each show going back and looking a little bit at one of the previous tournaments. We did 2014 in the first episode. Mm-hmm. We'll do 2010 tonight.
Yeah. But let's before we go into moments, let's actually climb in the Wayback Machine and actually remember what happened in the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. First thing that comes to mind I want to point out, the only World Cup song that was actually enjoyable, that waving flag song, which was actually technically not the official song, but it was a song everyone used.
Ergo, it's the official song.
It was actually a decent song.
Okay.
It was enjoyable.
I'm glad you clarified that. Would you tell me something more pertinent, like who won that tournament?
Yes, Spain.
Yeah.
Is it Spain? Spain?
España.
España.
Mm-hmm.
They captured their first title against Netherlands.
Mm-hmm. Overwhelming favorites in that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Third place went to Germany. Fourth place went to Uruguay. Top scorers. There were four of them, all tied on 5 goals apiece. Name one.
I know one of them.
Let me give you a hint.
Yeah.
The four clubs or countries I just mentioned, it's one from each of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. I'm glad this would have changed my answer. So, Fernando Torres?
No.
Damn it.
No, Fernando Torres.
That was past his time.
No. Here's what you're mistaking. You're mistaking that for, like, I believe, the 2012 Euros, where he scored a bunch of garbage goals and basically won the Golden Boot that way.
Yeah, you're right. Man. Dang.
So we have a player from Uruguay,
mm-hmm.
player from Germany,
yep.
player from the Netherlands,
okay. So
player from Spain.
The one from Uruguay would be Diego Forlan.
Bingo. Okay. And I'll go ahead and say he won the Best Player Award,
mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, did you know that he's still playing?
No.
He's playing in the Hong Kong Premier League right now.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. He's walking home from those things.
39 years old.
Let's see if I can get someone from Spain again. Man, maybe Iniesta?
No.
No.
David Villa.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's 2010. That was kind of his prime time. So, yeah, he had five.
One from Germany. One from Germany.
One from Netherlands.
That one has to be Thomas Müller.
Yep.
Yeah. And then from Netherlands, at that point, Robin van Persie, maybe.
No. Actually, this would not have been my first guess either.
Schneider?
Yeah, Schneider. Wesley Schneider had five. So, young player, and this kind of makes me feel old. Thomas Müller was actually the young player of the tournament.
Ooh, man.
Which, to think of him as a young player.
Mm-hmm.
Would you fancy a guess at the best goalkeeper?
Iker Casillas.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nailed it. Spain also won the Fair Play Award, so they just going away with all the hardware.
Good for them.
2010 World Cup also saw U.S. getting out of the group stages. I think one of the big things I remember is one of my favorite U.S. kits ever.
Mm.
The blue with the white sash.
It's a good one.
I mean, rolling into that first match against England,
mm-hmm.
looking like the Continental Army. So fitting. So awesome.
Wait, don't shoot until you see the whites in their
whites
eyes?
Whites in their eyes, yeah. Yep. And by that we mean hit it real hard so that Bob Green lets spills it over the line.
Don't hit it until you can see the whites in Rob Green's eyes. They will be very large and visible.
As he will be, just as confused as you are of how he's still considered the best keeper in 2010 for them.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
Other notable moments. Technically, the only undefeated team in the tournament was New Zealand.
I knew that one too. That's incredible.
They had three draws.
Yeah.
in the group stage.
Totally incredible.
Didn't advance. But
yeah.
Had three draws.
Incredible achievement for a country
no one took them down.
Really struggles to get in there very often. I mean, this tournament just had so many fantastic moments. I wrote a few of these down. Lampard's not goal against Germany.
Mm-hmm. Which obviously kind of is the mother of what we are enjoying this World Cup, which is VAR.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I feel like, when the ball first got rolling as far as like, hey, the technology is out there. We should probably figure out a way to not have these problems.
Yeah, here's what's weird. We have VAR. Do we have goal line technology in this World Cup as well?
I think so.
I think so as well.
I think it was used at one point in one of the matches.
Now that you say that, I think I remember seeing it as well.
But like, so all of the review and goal line and everything, like, we have that now. Mm-hmm. This is why we had to have it. Because Frank Lampard hit a ball off the crossbar against Germany. It bounced down a good 4 feet in the goal and then spun out.
It was very clearly.
Like it wasn't on the line or near the line. It was like probably like 2 to 3 ball lengths in.
Yeah. That would have made
not more.
That would have made it 2-2. Would have drawn things back up for England. They went on to lose that game 4-1. Odds are they would have still lost that game.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's get beyond that and remember how that actually did change the game. How about France in this tournament? An absolute ludicrous train wreck before they even got into the tournament. If you remember, in qualifying, they failed to actually get out of their group. Had to go into the second place playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Did not perform well in that. And then the second leg, it required a Thierry Henry handball. To keep ball in play against Ireland.
He was keeping the ball out at like the goal line, right?
Yeah, there was a low cross across the box, and he used his hand to stop it because he didn't see it get through, and then he tapped it in. So things already not good before they even get in. Literally no one got along with Coach Raymond Domenech, like no one.
So they basically had a full-on like player mutiny.
Yeah, they drew with Uruguay and lost to Mexico in their first two group games. Anelka was sent home in the aftermath of the second game because he insulted Raymond Domenech at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
The team then, in response to that, decided to boycott training, and then they went on to lose to lowly South Africa in the final.
Like, I remember watching on like ESPN, like the
shot of the bus.
Well, the shot of like the players just like standing around and like not going onto the training pitch.
Yeah, there was shots of them sitting and refusing to get off the team.
Yeah,
bus.
There's the team
like,
bus.
It was just so great. Maradona was the coach of Argentina in this tournament. Like, absolutely mind-boggling that someone gave him control of a national team. I know his standing in the country and what we're talking about with all this, but it's Diego Maradona. Like,
yeah.
No one should give him control of anything. Like, the remote control.
You're surprised,
to your
like,
television.
The number one story out of this World Cup wasn't, like, he punched somebody in the match.
Oh,
or he, like,
man.
Kicked a reporter in the face in a press conference or something like that.
Too good. This is also the tournament we will forever blame and remember for fucking vuvuzelas.
Yeah.
That would have never been a worldwide thing had we not had that World Cup in 2010.
Because remember, like, I mean, for a good 5 years, I mean, I guess they still probably peek their head around every once in a while around here. But I remember for like the 5 years after that, you would go to like soccer games here, anywhere. And you just see some putz roll in with his vuvuzela, like he just thought this was, like it was his idea.
Yeah, like, oh, crap, I'm going to bring it. I mean, we still get people that request if they can bring them into FC Cincinnati games.
What's the answer there?
Officially, no.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I support that.
Yeah. And this, there's one moment that we haven't talked, I'm stealing all the moments. Do you have any moments that you want
to
offer?
No, and I think you got to go to the one that we're missing here.
This is the best moment of the whole World Cup. The Luis Suarez punch off the line in the quarterfinals for Uruguay against Ghana.
Inspired by Thierry Henry.
Sure he was, yeah. He's going to blame anyone, I'm sure that's it. Hands down, my favorite moment of the entire World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those moments that is totally divisive in the world of soccer. Like, no one should cheat like that. That's kind of the angle that I feel like a lot of Americans took with it. I absolutely loved it. It was one of those things that was like, that guy was like, I will do anything.
Yeah, I mean, that was
for my team to have a shot to
advance. That was our first real moment on a world stage of learning that that's that guy's mentality.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it would play out.
That's
over the next several years.
That's a mentality that's kind of like okay in South America, particularly in like Uruguay.
Right.
In Argentine soccer and even Brazilian soccer to an extent. The idea of deceit, and gaming the rules of the system is looked at as just an aspect of the game.
Right.
Right? Like, people get so worked up about diving. South America, they don't care about that because it's literally a part of the game is to con the ref. Like, it's a capability, and therefore, why wouldn't you do it? Because everyone does it. So this was that moment where you had to define whether or not you were okay with people bending the rules of the system, or whether you were steadfastly like, nah, that's breaking the rules. Mind you, he was sent off with a red card.
Mm-hmm.
Ghana were then given a penalty, mm-hmm. which they subsequently missed. I'm trying to think back. Was that Asamoah Gyan that missed that penalty as well? I think it was.
Yeah, real bummer.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to see that happen.
Literally, like, if there's one moment that I think of from the World Cup, it's watching him rise up and punch it. And then I remember watching the video camera in the tunnel that was recording him watching it on TV because he wasn't allowed to be in the stadium proper for it. And just so incredible watching his reactions and that he sacrificed an opportunity for himself to play in the semifinal. Ultimately, probably hurt his team's chances in that game. But they wouldn't have even been there had he not taken the action in the first place. So, definitely my favorite moment of the World Cup in 2010. We did reach out to a bunch of listeners to see, mm-hmm. hey, what did you guys think was some of the cooler moments? And we got some different answers than what you and I both provided. Our good friend Chris, that you worked with the Dynamo, he offered up the two high-quality U.S. men's national team pylon celebrations that tournament. And the videos that he provided for that were obviously the goal against Slovenia.
It was Bradley's goal to get us back in that match.
Yep. And then, of course, the next one that came up was, I'm sure, the goal heard around the world.
Landon Donovan's goal. I can remember the entire sequence of that play, like, from, like, Howard actually having to make a legit save, like, mm-hmm. right beforehand, and then quickly trying to roll that ball out.
Yep.
Getting up the field, I think it was two passes in, Dempsey shoots,
mm-hmm.
stuffed, and then it's like both Dempsey's laying down. I want to say someone else is also in the box, just yeah. like falling over at that point, and you're just like, ah, and there's that split second you're like, dang it, that was our chance. And then there he comes, Landon,
just
running in there.
Slicing across.
Smacking it home.
Mm-hmm.
He runs to the side, corner flag there on the near side. Obviously, the famous call by Ian Dark, the go mm-hmm. go USA, certainly through.
Oh yeah, I mean it's an iconic moment in American soccer history.
Pretty much, I think what put him on the map as far as his, you know, kind of American broadcasting career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just kind of just the guy that ESPN had just put on that match.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of the guy they used for Premier League. But then he became like, hey, that's the guy we want doing all of the U.S. matches
yeah,
now.
Yeah, like, from that point
ESPN
on.
ESPN was like, if we're doing a U.S. match, we're going to get Ian Dark to be the play-by-play for that.
Yeah.
And then what was the other part of that? Who was it that was sitting there, staying there? He had a bib on and he was just doing like this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Was it it might have been like Demerit or something, just like, ooh.
Giving the old double-fisted fist bump. Lots of great moments still coming in as well. Fletcher, our good buddy from Detroit,
mm-hmm.
He offered up the first goal for South Africa. They did have, I think, the first goal of the tournament, right?
Well, yeah, because obviously as the host nation, they had the first match, mm-hmm. and they took the lead in that one.
He, ever the flame thrower, offered mm-hmm. up Gian's goal over the U.S. men's national team. To eliminate us from the tournament in the next round. Heartbreak.
Yeah.
Gotta remember that as well. I remember driving
to my parents' house in Wisconsin, listening to that match on the radio.
Yeah.
Like at one point, like my wife was like, do you need me to drive? Like you're punching the steering wheel and like driving erratically and getting really bad. Like
we took that one in at Molly Malone's in Covington. It was literally jam-packed wall-to-wall.
Oh, is that normally the case for U.S. matches?
Yeah.
In the World Cup?
Weird. But at that point, it wasn't necessarily always that way. That was kind of the first World Cup where people were really gathering like that in that kind of capacity. nationwide. But great place to take it in. Fletcher also had offered up this one, a tidbit that I totally forgot about, but North Korea's propaganda and spin after getting decimated by Portugal. Remember, they
didn't they claim that they won like 4-0 or something?
Yeah, like back home they did. And not only that, but they flew in fake fans for this one as well, which was just totally nuts. Like,
when like the highlight that they showed over there in their broadcast, like, yeah, we won 4-0, was like just the players walking out, and then like the players, like they're like walking off the pitch afterwards. Yeah. Like there's no actual play.
Well played, North Korean media. Also got a couple other ones submitted in to us. Matt Brew, longtime listener, he offered up the great video. I don't know if you ever saw it.
This was actually the first time I had seen this one.
It was one of those ones that if you'd never actually seen it, it was kind of great. But if you grew up in the early 2000s, like most of us did.
Is that Doom?
Yeah, it was Doom. Doom was a video game. I didn't know if it was Doom or
Duke Nukem there.
You know, they're pretty much the exact same thing, to be completely honest. But there was this great one where instead of it being a actual video game, like gun sounds right. with your actual shooting, you would, and it is Doom. Instead of it being a gun, you would switch to a vuvuzela, and it would then proceed to kill everyone when it would buzz through. So you'll hear it here. And everyone you're looking at is dying. So great video there. It was one of the better memes in the early days of memeing on the internet. And then Gage Magoto, always one to contribute. He said watching USA Ghana at a BW3s on the way back home from vacation. The place was packed and everyone in the building was there to watch the game. Even though it was a loss, that experience turned him into a soccer fan, which I think a lot of fans can trace back there as well.
Yeah, so, 2010 was a big moment for a lot of people.
So thanks to those who contributed. We'll be reviewing the 2006 World Cup on next week's show. So
look forward to pretzels, German beer, ESPN botching their entire coverage.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Deja vu.
It was an interesting one.
Yeah, it was. That gets us to winners and wankers. We have to throw that one in at the end of the show, as we always like to do. Anywhere you would like to start today, sir?
I'll start with my winner, and because it was just, there's always like those quirky, hilarious stories about the World Cup, like things that fans do. There's a group of Mexican supporters who one of their buddies couldn't make it to the World Cup. His wife wouldn't let him go.
Yeah.
So they instead made a cardboard cutout of him and are just taking him around all over Russia. It's to fantastic. His matches and to like, you know, after parties and
taking him to cool sites.
Yeah, and just taking pictures of his cardboard great. Cutout of their buddy.
It's absolutely fantastic. I also went with a cool fan winner for this one. I'm giving it to the Socceroo supporters, the Australian fans.
Yeah.
They reportedly drank the entire city of that they were visiting. I've lost the name of the town all of a sudden, but they literally drank all of the beer in the entire city, completely gone.
Yeah.
One bar reporting that they did 450 liters. I'm American, so I don't know how that much is, but I'm just going to assume that's like four tanker trucks worth of beer.
Yeah.
So congrats to the Socceroos. Love seeing that somehow Russia not being prepared for alcohol consumption. Just...
Was it just because they weren't banking on that much beer?
They're like, look, we got all the vodka.
We got all the vodka covered. We got it.
We got it.
For days.
Yeah. Apparently, that's not something that the Australians frequent.
No.
You have a wanker this week.
My wanker, we already mentioned already, but I think it deserves being talked about a little bit. The whole Mo Salah thing of just, I'm going to, oh, you're mad at me? Well, then fine, I'll just never play for you again. I think it takes the spirit and the, whatever you call it, pomp out of the whole, like, playing for your country.
Yeah.
To just be willing to want to throw it away that easily just because people are mad at you, so you're just going to be all butthurt. It sullies what has been otherwise the year of Mo Salah.
Yeah, well, he's not had the best of World Cups. You can imagine that he's maybe not experiencing this the way that he wanted to either.
No, this is not the way he dreamt it up.
Yeah. I'm going to give my wanker this week to the American supporters who are just hell-bent on not enjoying this World Cup and drawing every possible conclusion they can about this World Cup back to how bad the U.S. men's national team is. Like, every single game that I watch, someone, sometimes even people I've kind of respected, have just gone out of their way to make sure that we know that the men's national team is not there and that we should feel bad and be angry about that. Look, that's never ended. I'm not pleased or tickled pink that we're not playing in this thing. But I am to the point where I just don't care what your take is. Like, not every aspect of this World Cup is an indictment on American soccer, Major League Soccer, or what's happening in the United States. That Iceland qualified and that we didn't are completely different scenarios.
Yeah. I was telling you, my uncle, who is not a soccer fan, was like texting me and asking me like, "Hey, how could this possibly be?" And I was just like, "Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some larger issues that this brings light to that maybe given this pause of not making it to the World Cup that our federation and other people should maybe address and rethink. But like the bottom line, like we didn't qualify because the group of people we put together to play those qualification matches lost matches they had no business losing. And it's just that simple. We weren't worse than Panama. We were definitely better than Panama. Definitely should have qualified ahead of them. That's the shocking thing about it. We lost matches we weren't supposed to lose. So while it definitely, you know, pro rel is not why we didn't qualify. Pay to play system is not why we didn't qualify.
Nope.
MLS being apparently just an incarnation of Satan himself is not the reason we didn't qualify.
Nope.
23 dudes that couldn't get a win against Trinidad and Tobago, who basically fielded a B-side and had already pretty much given up on everything at that point as far as qualification went because they're already out. That's why.
Yeah.
Period. End of subject. Now, again, do we have now time to pause and look back and go, maybe there's some structural things that we need to be changing? Sure, this is definitely the time to do that now, but that's not why.
Yeah, there are lessons to be learned in all of this, including the games we're watching now and the systems that got those teams to the points that they're at. But man, like, I tweeted about this the other day, but there are some people during this World Cup that I just don't even understand why they watch soccer.
Right, yeah.
Like, if this is this unenjoyable for you, What are you doing?
Yeah, we say this all the time. Like, if you are, if all your feed is just negativity and doom and gloom, like, do you even, like, when was the last time you enjoyed this?
Only when it's in its most purest forms. Mm. If there aren't 12 people watching a game in a dimly lit, crappy high school football stadium, then it's not authentic enough.
No, it's all terrible, corrupt, and the bane of soccer's existence.
All right. Well, on that note, let's end this podcast on a positive note in that we will be getting you a third episode here next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
All things considered and no disasters roll out between now and then. We will try to get this show up a little bit earlier this week. Hopefully that's something we'll be able to make happen.
Not a high bar.
Yeah. Really not a high one. So anything before the day that we record will improve this. That said, if you want to get a hold of us, you want to have your voice heard, get a hold of us by doing so on Twitter at Wrong Side of Pond to get a hold of myself. You can get at Jeremy Lance. You can also email us at the email address no one ever uses, contact at Wrong Side of the Pond.
When was the last time you actually checked it?
It feeds into my other normal email address. So,
so you don't even know when stuff...
No, I can see him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
anything?
It's been a while since we've had a non-sports betting agency trying to advertise with us.
Wait, we've been turning down advertisement?
Not ones for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're ones we don't want. It's debatable, huh?
I don't, yeah, well.
That's a conversation for after the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you soon.
make them feel them.